Ladies man, but I'm a man now. For courting six girls all at once, they used me.
Say bye-bye, baseball!
My mother said it was naughty.
Oh,
no,
so it's only five. Bye, oh, bye.
But I said if it's naughty, sure it's also very
bad. And the lollipops is grab grabs done. The benches are clearing.
Dust Up with Hilly and Lolly is brought to you by Mr. Ned Custom Men's Suiting in New York City. Whether you're a professional athlete, celebrity, or just a couple of softball bums like us, if you're ready to ditch the old dusty suit and stop dressing like an animal, visit Mr. Ned, located at 137 Fifth Avenue, New York City, and tell Verm, Hilly and Lolly sing.
Welcome back, folks. We are into another episode of the Dust Up Debrief Sessions, Hilly, and we got Nick Shales back with us again tonight, and we got a hell of a topic, one that I am frigging interested in, defensive shifts in men's fast-pitch softball.
It's just like we're at the hotel after a game, having a Miller Lite. We're just going to overanalyze the shit out of everything.
Yeah. Shales, you did an episode of these debrief sessions already. What are your thoughts on it? And then what are your thoughts on this topic we got going here tonight?
Boys, loving the debrief sessions. They're nice, short, quick, not like our normal debrief sessions in the hotel room, having a few beers afterwards. But this is awesome. It's good to have a chat, get everything off our chest, and do it in a nice, tidy little way.
Yeah. So what I like about having you here for this this topic. So we're talking about defensive shifts in the men's fast pitch game. The last session you're on, we're talking about relaying signs and location. And we talked about the differences between baseball mentality around sign stealing and then what it kind of being a part of the men's fast pitch game. Defensive shifts, in my mind, if you compare baseball to softball, they're a little bit different, right? In baseball, they're more for the dead pull hitters. And in men's fast pitch softball, aside from, you know, a Colin Abbott or a younger Jason Hill, who got the gradual one, it's largely based around defending the slappers who can hit, or the guys who primarily play that slapping role, or they can beat you in a couple of different ways. Just what's your overall take on defensive shifts? You've been a part of a bunch of them. We'll go through those, but want to hear what's your take on defensive shifts in the men's game?
No, I like them. You've got to obviously do it in the right positions, but like you said, well, I've been implementing a bit of it over the last couple of years, just trying to play the percentages, basically, especially now that I'm playing a lot more third base. Starting to move a bit off the line, because honestly, how many hits go straight down the line and how many hits go between the 5-6 hole? So, like you said, like there's not too many players in the game that are those dead pull hitters. Jason Hill was definitely one of them for a long time. Yeah. But outside of that, there's not too many. But yeah, the slapping is a tough part to try and take it away from. And playing second base and third base, I got to be a part of a lot of those defensive shifts.
I guess it's doing your homework. Well, I get, you know, we've played against each other so damn much now over the years. But I guess it's, especially against new teams or national teams and stuff, it's doing your homework, knowing your batter, knowing their tendencies, analytics. Well, I shouldn't say analytics is not part of our game, but it's not part of our game to the extent as it is with all these, as in depth as it is in the major leagues with all these numbers, yeah, and these stats. And I don't even know what half of them are and what half of them mean, but there is quite an amount of video being watched this day and age and at our disposal, and video sessions between games and this and that, going over lineups. So all that comes into play, I guess, for you guys, when you decide, okay, I'm going to play 3 feet off the line, or I'm going to hug the line, or, you know, I'm going to play a slap defense against a guy like Alan Packer, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So let me tell you, I'm going to tell you my thoughts on this. I love the defensive shifts on these slappers. I'm going to tell you why, because, okay, we'll take an Alan Packer. right? And then the other one, I think, was Fernando Petrick. He was another fellow more Chris recent, Byrne. Right? Where I'm playing first base, okay? And I'm there, and you gotta commit to one of them, right? Okay, do I stay back by the base and you protect myself if this guy rips one down and give myself a chance to get an out? Or and then risk him dropping it down, making me look like an idiot and getting to first base, right? You're just able to steal a base if you put it down the first base line, right? So when we started back with the Hill United team, and Shalesy, you would come over and you were playing second base in some of these games. And that's when I said, well, you want to dodge on up by the pitcher there for a bit? And then so we bring Shalesy in.
Me and Shales used to switch. He used to go over on third, and I used to go stand next to the pitcher, hoping to Jesus that Buddy Bunce.
Yeah. So what we did, I went behind the bag then, Shalesy, at this point, and it really was you were in a full, like ready, like almost like you're in a sprinter stance. Like you were ready to move. You had to go in, you had to go side to side. And my job was to try and get the bloop if it went over your head or get a hard one that came down the line, and I toss it over to you covering first base. That was my first real experience with being a part of a defensive shift in the game. But maybe let our listeners in on the behind-the-scenes thinking of why we came up with that with a team like Argentina or some of those national team players. And then with you being the guy coming in, what's the objective and what's going through your head?
Well, honestly, there's not much going through my head. I was an idiot for doing it. But the main reason I was in that stance...
You're an idiot for putting me over there.
Yes, we were. And, the reason I get so low is basically just to make myself as small as possible. So if they do end up absolutely turning on one, all I have to do is move my glove about 2 feet either way. That's so I could be as quick to the ball as I possibly can. If I'm standing up now, I've got to cover the 6 feet. So I try to stay as low as possible to the ground, try and make myself as small as possible. But I try and come in as far as I can to be able to cover that bunt and leave you back so you can cover the base. So if you were playing in and I'd have to cover first, then I'm sprinting to try and get across to that base, come down the line to try and take that throw and hope to Jesus that I don't run into that runner.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm in there, I can go in and make that play and you're waiting for that ball on first base. That's my theory behind it.
Now is there a situation where or is it possible that, okay, if you move in, you're 4 or 5 feet to the left of the pitcher. If a guy like Alan Pecker somehow slaps one and it bounces over you because you're in so shallow, is he not standing on second?
Yeah, there's a good chance.
Or is it that if you stay back, he's going to beat it out first anyway?
Yeah, there's a couple, man, too. And on that, Hilly, where if I'm playing back and it's a really high chopper, and this is where Shalesy and I practice it too, was the verbal communication, not even just reading. If we know it went really high, I'd actually sprint towards second base to try and either cut it down. Okay. Chances are we're not going to get him out at first, but you try and keep it from going to second. So we kind of swap roles, and then Shalesy would come over in case I did get there. Yeah. But it's... When you make that shift, it's the closest comparison I could say to playing chess, where someone makes the first move and, it could be an aggressive move. That's when all the chess playing starts, because some of it is maybe you're trying to take away the slap altogether because the guy can't really swing worth a shit. Right. So you want to go in and say, well, you're not bunting. My guy's here. So now you try and beat Adam Folkart by doing a full swing. Right. And then there's others. Maybe you're trying to get in the hitter's head and take away a weapon. But then, that's when the chess starts. And do you revert back if there's runners in certain positions? Do you revert back when there's two strikes on the batter? Right. But that's what I like the most about it. When you do make that shift, it's almost like you're making a play on a chessboard and you want to see how the other team reacts to it.
Yeah, so basically a lot of that fielding in close as well is to tell that hitter, I want you to hit. I want you to try and hit it by me because I don't think you can. Mm-hmm. I think you're basing your game off trying to slap that ball into the ground, put the ball down, Like, you look at the 2019 world titles. Who was in the championship? Look at Japan and Argentina. Who were the biggest slappers in the world?
Yeah.
Those two teams. So now you start to take that away from them. Now they've either got to try and beat you by doing that and trying to get it by you, or they've got to start swinging, like you said, against your Jack Besgrove or your Adam Folkards or Sean Cleary's and those sort of guys. Now, all of a sudden, what are they going to do? You've just taken one of their biggest weapons out of their arsenal.
Yeah.
So for us to be able to manage that and to be able to come off, like you said, come off the line a bit, make them get in their heads, that really messes with a lot of hitters.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody in the game now where there's like the big exaggerated shift? Like, is there anybody left that, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, like the Colin Abbott shift, I'll call it, but is, you know, I don't really.
Maybe Ochoa. I don't know how much of an exaggerated shift. I went back. But he can hit the ball over to the left field fence.
Well, that's what I'm saying. All these top guys now are using all fields, right? Like they're
Like the shift that we use now that we've started to implement anyway was me coming off the line a good 5 or 6 feet. So I take away that 5-6 hole and it pushes shape.
And we'll just clarify for the listeners now. This is when you're playing third base, right?
Yes.
So you're giving up the line to protect, not giving it up, but you're making it where foul play is not, you know, your friend at this point. You're
playing the percentages, really, is what you're trying to do.
Exactly. So now you've got to try, if you want to go down that line, you've got to slot it, because I can still make most of them, but you've got to get it pretty close to that line to get it by me. But now I've taken away your whole 5-6 hole. Mm-hmm. And now Shane pushed up the middle, shortstop pushed up the middle. Now up the middle's taken away.
Yeah.
Now the only way that you're really getting the ball through is if you're just hitting it to the left of a normal shortstop position. And even then, you might not get it through. Yeah. But that's us playing the percentages. How many times do you see balls go straight up the middle or in that 5-6 hole?
Yeah.
And in saying that, like, you're always giving up something. You still got to give up, because there's still going to be times where, okay, there's a routine ground ball to or the shortstop, a normal shortstop would normally play, and then all of a sudden, guys are beating that out, right? Yeah. So that's
now it's a tough play to make.
Yeah, yeah.
But now,
so you're always giving up a little, but if you're playing the odds, and if you have the odds correct on that particular batter, then you look like a genius when Shane takes two steps to the left and hits a, because I've been on the receiving end of it, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of the listeners have, where you hit one up the middle, so that's a base hit. No, two steps to the left, you're thrown at it first.
Yeah, and then what the thing, when you do the shift like Shales is talking about, or when I was playing first base, we'd do something similar too, especially if a guy was one that could hit up the middle. You know, we'd move over and whoever's playing second base at the time, whether it's Tony or it could be Horny when we're playing on the national team, or Shales, you were there, we would give up the first base line, right, where – okay, I grab the one that's at least an arm length away where I know I can get back to the bag. But what you're giving up there really are doubles and triples, right? When you stay close to the line, you're giving up maybe a single, right? But the ball is going there a higher percentage of the time than it's going straight down the line for a double or a triple. So you're playing those percentages, like you say. And when you look back, you know, how many times hugging the line where you grab one, get it out, and save it? I would argue, just based on my playing career, those are fewer and further between than the ones that are going to go between those holes or go off the middle. And I think they're more impactful when you get them out.
Yeah, 100%. Like, we're taking away outs now. We're taking a good 5 or 6 more outs away and hits away from hitters because of these shifts. But like you said, like, people will come up to you after a game and say, oh, you gave up a hit down the line for a double or a triple or whatever. And it's just like, yeah, you don't remember the 5 or 6 outs that I just took away from you, do you?
Yeah.
Like, it's there's trade-offs. Like Hilly said, you've got to be smart enough to pitch to hitters a certain way to get these outs as well. And that's all talked about off the field. But But no, we've been lucky enough, especially with national team coaches and that sort of thing, to be able to try this stuff out and get given a bit of rope, and lucky enough not to hang myself with it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, and same like the outfielders. Okay, the outfielders are playing the shift, or they're shading to the right side or left side, and every so often, like, you're giving up a little bit, but every so often you're going to be wrong. And you know, it's just the numbers game. Like, you're telling me a guy, like, I keep using Kyle Navid because he was a pull hitter. You tell me he's never hit a home run to left field before. Like, come on, right? Like, I mean, sometimes you're wrong, but if you're playing the numbers, and if you're, you know, and it goes back to doing your homework and teammates communicating and knowing who you're playing against, right? And having these chats, and like you said, you know, if when you all works out, you take away 5 or 6 hits a game. So there you go.
But it's also, you're not, there's another element of it too. And this is the one I think that will kind of be comparable to baseball. It's when you commit to putting a shift on, how important is it to have the pitcher and catcher on board with the game plan? You know, if you want the ball hit to Nick Shales playing in with a left-handed batter up, you're not going to be throwing rise balls on the outside corner unless you're trying to go for a strikeout, right? At that point. So in baseball, where the shifts were primarily everybody moving on this side of the field, you're trying to get inside pitches. But Shalesy, maybe from your experience on this, you know, getting the pitcher and catcher on board with this shift, how important is that?
It's very important, especially if you're in close, because if they leave one over a certain half of the plate into a guy's power zone, and all of a sudden he's swinging, now you're in trouble. Now you've got to make yourself as small as possible to try and dodge that ball, because you can get killed in there. The ball's coming off really quick. But as long as you keep yourself small and the pitcher makes sure he sticks to his game plan, make sure he sticks to hitting his spots, and if he misses, miss off the plate, that's a massive part of it. Like, you'll see, like, you've got to trust your pitcher if you're going in that close to the hitter. Because if you don't, you're just giving yourself up.
Yeah. And again, communication and doing your homework and having a leader on the infield to take charge. You know, I know for us it's Ryan Boland, our catcher, and it probably makes sense in that way, because he's the guy calling the pitches for the pitcher. I mean? He's directing traffic on the defensive side of things, and he's the one calling the pitches. So then, you know, everybody's on the same page.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's cool, man. That's the part of the game, I think, that really separates intermediate ball from, you know, the best ball in the world, when you get to see the best go against the best and try and get those edges, right? What we're talking about here, similar to Shalesy the last time you're around, we're talking about teams and players trying to work together to get a competitive advantage. And this is what it is. We're talking about trying to get a competitive advantage versus a team that may not do a shift and might get beaten and be more exposed than they would if they didn't do it.
Yeah, no, like, and honestly, that new shift, like that coming off the line, it takes away a lot of those hoppers too, because those pitchers are trying, you know what pitchers are like. They always think they're infielders. They think they can make all the plays that they can reach. And most of the time, it comes off a glove and goes into a hole.
But I got to jump in there. Adam Folkert, I called him the mongoose. Right? He jumped off like a friggin' we call him the mongoose. He could get there and he could throw it. Cleary's pretty good too. He's an athlete out there. But then you got others. You know, some previous guests maybe on the podcast. Not going to throw no names, but you guys know who you are. There's two in particular that I'm talking about right now.
Cheese is that tall. He's after robbing home runs from the pigeon circle.
Yeah.
Putting his arm up.
Yeah. I'm just we'll just leave it there to let the previous guests that are pitchers wonder who you are. But it's you're right, Shalesy. But those hoppers, these ones that we're talking about, the choppers up the middle, the little bunt that you can't get to, the one where the pitcher will be throwing her hand out. Now you're coming across like this wasn't even anything to deal with. This is just a run-of-the-mill ground ball. Way you go.
Right? Now it's a routine play. Yeah. Right. So with the pitchers, like you said, like it's you got to talk to them before, because Adam and I talk all the time, obviously. But as soon as that ball goes up, they're going to go for it. But you've got to have your third baseman or whoever's coming across to be able to communicate with them and basically tell them to get the fuck out of there, because they're coming across, they can make the play easily. So you can go back over film and you could see the pitcher start to go for it. Then all of a sudden they pull their glove back and duck out of the way because all of a sudden you got the third baseman coming through.
Before we wrap it up, I want to do just a couple of specific situations here, Shalesy. So I mentioned it briefly earlier. You know, when you got to make a decision, okay, the first thing decision you're making is we're going to do a shift. I'll use us as this example, right? Where you went in, I stay back. And let's say it's a Alan Pecker up or someone who can slap on any pitch. At two strikes on that batter, that's when a decision comes in, right? Are we going to commit that this guy is probably going to be swinging, 95% chance he's going to swing? Or you start seeing a lot more of those running up the box swings trying to knock it into the ground. Like when you get two strikes on the batter, I'll say there's no one on base at this point. What comes into play when you decide whether you're going to stay in with two strikes or go back with two strikes?
Not too much anymore, because a lot of these slap hitters would trust their slapping more than they do their swing. So for me, two strikes is probably the main time that I'm in, because now I'm in their head. Now they've got to try and get it past me. They don't want to hit it my way, so they're going to try and hit it the opposite side of the field. So that's when you start to make yourself small and make them try and hit it away from you.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing I'll say on this is that these are the things, the little things that win ball games, especially at that level, but really at every competitive level. You know, once you start getting into going to nationals and bantam midget and stuff, like the quicker you implement these strategies and these having these conversations, these are the things that are going to win and lose ball games.
Yeah. And what I like about them, and Hilly, you're bang on, not only ball games, they win and lose championships, some of these decisions. But what I like about them, and when they're done, you just can't have one player going rogue. The ones, what I like about it is it brings the team closer together, especially on the defensive side of things. Everybody kind of has a role, because you got to be on toes. You got to be covering for a guy, and you got to know, and the communication needs to be there. That's what I like the most about breaking these type of plays and strategies down. And that's what I like about these debrief sessions, boys, that we get to dive into these things and really spend a little bit of time on the topic. But Shalesy, thanks again for coming back for another debrief. And it's awesome, man. Your insights on this, in my opinion, are second to none. Hilly, another awesome one.
Yeah, pumped up, man. What's Shipley's number? I think I might order a new glove now after this one. Get back in the dirt.
Yeah. Well, if you want to go left-handed, you can have mine. There you go. Yeah. Well, there you have it, folks. Thanks for hanging out for another dust-up debrief session. We got Lucas and Nick here, a little bit of rum ragged to take us out.
Ladies man, but I'm a man now. For courting six girls all at once, they
say bye-bye baseball.
My mother said it was naughty,
but I said
if it's naughty, sure it's also very